Monster Man, special episode, Half-Orcs.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, Patreon backer Daniel. But James, you say, special episodes come out on Friday. Well, you may have noticed that there was no special episode last Friday. And so it is, in fact, today. And the regular episode will be on Friday, and then we'll go back to our normal schedule. No promises, but that's the plan. If you'd like to be like Daniel and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, in addition to a special episode, you'll also get access to all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I'm taking a look at the myths and religions of the world and how to find inspiration in them for fantasy role-playing games. So Daniel, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Alright, Daniel has asked me to talk about half-orcs, and in particular, how to make half-orcs work in your D&D game. Unless you've been under a rock, or more generously, having fun playing at your table and ignoring the internet, you will have noticed that the topic of half-orcs is somewhat controversial in the world of role-playing games, and I can see why. We'll address that controversy a little bit when we get to half-orcs in general, but probably nowhere more so than in the half-orc are kind of traditional understandings of race and unpleasant assumptions about racial, like, quote-unquote purity, more visible than in the half-orc. I don't think it's intended to be that way, but I do think that's kind of how it comes out. But before we get to that, if we want to talk about half-orcs, we have to start with orcs. Orcs are creatures in D&D that kind of have a lot of problems, but also I think have a lot of potential, but we have to be a little selective when we think about them because they have been handled in many different ways. You'll often see people arguing about the nature of orcs in D&D and what it means and what it doesn't mean, and a lot of the time what I find is that those people are using quite different definitions of orc, but yet those different definitions are all supported by the game or by the text that the game is inspired by. So as I said way back in season one of this show, orc comes from an Old English word that to oversimplify just means monster. It's often translated as something like evil spirit, but the Latin word that it comes from is sometimes glossed as devil. It can also sometimes just be goblin. It basically just means any kind of monster. It was brought into the world of fantasy literature by J.R.R. Tolkien, who, as I'm sure you know, was an expert in Old English literature. And Tolkien handles orcs, like, I don't want to say inconsistently, but at different points within his books, he is trying to achieve different effects, and those different effects require different treatments of orcs. So you will sometimes hear Tolkien talking about orcs as if they are basically evil spirits, as if they are symbols or manifestations of evil. So, for example, and I'm no great Tolkien scholar, I got this off of Wikipedia. For example, in a letter to his son, he talks about orcs very much as representing the evil side of human nature. He says that romance comes from allegory, and so good versus evil in these kinds of stories is a representation of the good and evil sides of humanity. But that in reality, and here he's talking, I think, about the Second World War, he says, you know, both sides have evil people, both sides have orcs, but both sides also have perfectly ordinary people. So even in a struggle of good versus evil, not everyone on the other side is evil. So in that instance, it seems like orcs symbolize a manifest evil. But Tolkien can't resist sort of anthropologizing a trait that he shared in some ways, although, you know, maybe a bit more expertly, with Gary Gygax. And so he can't resist thinking of orcs as a culture with customs and a language and relationships with other cultures and with each other, with individual personalities. And that would tend to be how D&D subsequently handled them. If you look at most descriptions of orcs, it seems that in Dungeons & Dragons, it seems that they are a biological species. They're not supernatural in any way. They are capable of rational thought. They're maybe not super bright, but they definitely can think, right? The range of orc intelligence, and that's a whole other debate, but the range of orc intelligence significantly overlaps with the range of human intelligence. Therefore, they ought to be capable of making independent decisions, which means that they ought to be capable of moral agency. That's a little weird in terms of thinking about orcs' moral agency in theory, but in practice, it doesn't come up very much. There are rules in Monster Manual for, like, orc civilians, but my guess would be that the majority of AD&D campaigns do not encounter these situations where player characters are massacring villages full of orc infants and grinding them for XP. That is something that people talk about a lot, but it would surprise me to find that it happens very often. Not that it ever happens, because it's a big game with a lot of players. Obviously, everything happens at some point. But typically, in a game, when you encounter orcs, they are up to something. They're trying to attack you, or they're out there burning down villages, or they're taking hostages to go sell them into slavery or something. And under those circumstances, we would understand that regardless of orcs' status as moral agents, it would be moral to fight them. Most people who are not absolute pacifists believe that there are sometimes when violence is justified, and typically when you encounter an orc, they are in one of those types of situations. So the concerns, although interesting from a kind of theoretical standpoint in thinking about morality and identity in D&D, don't really come up. Until you start thinking about half-orcs. Because the existence of half-orcs means that we're getting into an area of orc-human relationship beyond the tactical, right? What is the nature of this relationship? The traditional view of half-orcs is that they're the product of sexual violence, which is not something that I choose to focus on my games. I'm not opposed to games dealing with mature themes or to games dealing with ideas that are, you know, quote-unquote dark or quote-unquote edgy or whatever, but personally, it is not my idea of a fun Saturday, and it's not something that I choose to incorporate into my games. And again, I would wager that it is, you know, Gary Allen Fine notwithstanding, not something that comes up in most games. You hear horror stories, and I'm sure these things do happen, but typically, I would say that even games that do include sexual violence probably aren't like searching examinations of this horrible thing and its effects, but rather puerile celebrations of violating a taboo or something. So if, like me, you are someone who does not choose to include a lot of sexual violence in your games, or indeed any, that must mean that humans are having relationships with orcs. And so that must mean either that humans and orcs can be romantically compatible and orcs are not merely one-dimensional monsters, or alternatively, that orcs are one-dimensional monsters and there are humans so depraved that they are willing to have relationships with these fiends. See, one of the problems of the half-orc is that because we're talking about reproduction and a character's background and all that kind of thing, we begin to get into one of the aspects of the orc that is challenging, but that we don't normally have to deal with very much, which is the question of biological essentialism. Again, without wanting to go into too much detail, that's the idea that certain traits that you or I might think of as individual or cultural are actually heritable traits. And this was very much how people tended to see the world, really right up into the modern era, and in fact, probably many people still do. You can see elements of it in the way that we talk about nationalities, right? So, for example, a friend of mine who recently moved to France said that while he was walking to work one day, he had passed the corpse of a rat, but that then when he was walking back from work, he saw that somebody had placed a rose next to its body. And I said, a romantic people, the French. Now, that kind of national stereotyping, particularly in this case where it's sort of like it's a positive trait, is pretty harmless, but it is an aspect of a problem that has a lot of negative elements, as I'm sure you can imagine. The idea that certain quote-unquote racial groups are inherently bad or good, smart or stupid, brave or cowardly, and given the history of this idea, and the fact that it's been used to oppress people or to deprive them of things, you can see why some people are not big fans of it, especially in their escapist entertainment. Now, I don't think that we can't do anything with the half-orc. I just think that these are things that we have to bear in mind as we take a look at how to use it. We have to think of the half-orc critically here, right? Not from an in-game perspective, but in terms of what we want to do with it in our games, what kind of conflict we're trying to invoke. In particular, why not a human? So we've said that there are basically two ideas about orcs. First, that they're some kind of evil spirits, and secondly, that they're an intelligent species, that they are what I typically in this show refer to as aliens, right? They're not supernatural, they're just another species. If orcs are evil spirits, brutal monsters who represent the physical presence of a metaphysical evil in the game world, then a half-orc is someone who has evil inside them, a heritage that is almost what we might call demonic. And that has to be particularly difficult for them because the source of their strength and hardiness is the fact that they have this awful heritage. And so I feel like that works best at an individual level, where the half-orcish heritage is an unusual feature. So instead of asking ourselves, what are half-orcs like, we must ask ourselves, what is the half-orc like? And there are definitely lots of examples in popular culture of heroes who struggle with the fact that the power that they can use to do good comes from an evil source. those periods of time where Venom is a hero in the Spider-Man comics, for instance, or you can kind of see this in the modern version of the character Blue Beetle, who is trying to do good using a tool that's intended to be a weapon of conquest. Alternatively, if orcs are just an intelligent material species, then what we have is a Star Trek type of situation, right? You have a character who is caught between two cultures that are hostile to one another. But there isn't some kind of, like, inherent genetic predisposition to evil. It's just that what we have here is someone who is, you know, a bit of a fantasy third culture kid. Interestingly, support for this idea comes from somewhere that I would not have expected, which is the AD&D First Edition Player's Handbook, because as I was reading the entry on half-orcs in preparation for this episode, I discovered that the half-orc, and I played a half-orc in AD&D First, so I have no excuses, the half-orc charisma penalty is not actually a change to their stat. It is merely a penalty on charisma rolls that they take when dealing with anybody who's not a half-orc. But it actually says that if their hirelings are half-orcs, you use the original unmodified charisma stat. So this actually means that the half-orc charisma penalty is not because there's something fundamentally untrustworthy or threatening about them. It's because of prejudice. It's the fact that non-half-orcs that they deal with don't like half-orcs. Now, I'm not saying that this was part of some kind of fully worked out plan. I don't think anything in any version of D&D prior to, let's say, AD&D 2nd was part of a fully worked out plan. I just think it's an interesting piece of the mosaic. Now, I think that this idea of being caught between two cultures, being pulled in two directions, or maybe feeling like you don't fit into either, is very powerful. But it's possible to go a little astray if you're analogizing a real-world culture to, you know, orcs too closely. Now, you might think that what I'm doing here is making a case for just getting rid of the idea of orcs and half-orcs completely, but I don't know that this works. I think that these are ideas that have great resonance for people. I think most people, even people who don't play role-playing games, if you were to ask them what is a fantasy monster that they know the name of, they might very well say orc. Whether that's from playing Warcraft or from watching The Lord of the Rings, you know, I think that these are very recognizable monsters, and I also think that the sort of widespread sense of what an orc is has been very influenced by orcs in World of Warcraft, who are more your sort of like, well, I mean, they're a whole other thing. I don't play that game, but my understanding is they're kind of on the noble savage sort of side of things, which is its own can of worms. Or orcs from Warhammer, who are kind of deadly but lovable comedy brutes. And so therefore, I think it's not necessary to get rid of them. I think their resonance is really useful, but we have to have a think about how they work in our games. So in my game, so I said before that the game that I play in has very different orcs, right? That they have the sort of stats of orcs. They fulfill the game role of orcs in that they are the shock troops of an evil overlord. But they're not a species. They are humans who have sold their souls to this evil deity and thus been transformed, right? So as sort of fanatical worshippers have undergone this rite that basically makes them super soldiers, right? That makes them stronger and hardier and more aggressive. And now they are orcs. So there's an aspect of intentionality to it that makes them a different kind of moral actor, especially for a power that typically tends to be quite sneaky and have, you know, more backstabby cultists than face-kicking assaulters. In my own old campaign, half-orcs existed, but they were not the product of a union between a human and an orc. Rather, they were a separate species of their own. They were created by genetic modification by ancient elven mages who were hoping to create a species of super soldiers, but that was actually unsuccessful. So the elves discarded them and kind of left them to find their way in the world on their own and moved on with their super soldier project, which eventually produced hobgoblins. Daniel suggested an alternative from his game, which is that half-orcs are just orcs, right? So there is, in fact, no difference in terms of quote-unquote genetics between orcs and half-orcs. Half-orc is just what people call orcs who don't participate in that orcish culture of, you know, pillaging and marauding. So peaceful orcs, orcs that you live near or that you can get along with, I mean peaceful on the scale of, you know, humans in a presumably strife-filled fantasy society. So that label half-orc is just another way of thinking about human relationship to orcs. Or indeed, one can imagine that it is an insult that the more warlike orcs give to their more socially acceptable cousins. When we're creating a version of half-orcs for our game, one of the first things that we have to consider is how does society feel about half-orcs? So for example, in the game that I'm currently running, which is set in that same world with the half-orcs who are their own species, although there are not any half-orcs in the game at present, the nation that the PCs come from in this campaign doesn't really meaningfully distinguish between different what in D&D would be called races, right? So humans and halflings and gnomes and dragonborn and whatever are all considered by that nation just as mortals. Are you a living creature that's got a single consciousness in a single body, and you're capable of thought and choice, then yes, you can become a citizen. And do you die? Yes, okay, you're a mortal. But then there are other creatures which fall into other categories. Well, for historical reasons, beast folk are considered to be a separate thing. So an example of that would be one of the players in my party is playing a Loxodon, and he actually is in a slightly different social category. They are seen as sort of people from a different place. But this is an intentional way of portraying the society that they come from as quite cosmopolitan. And what that means is that I can then have different people react differently to emphasize different aspects of the world's cultures. So the characters have gone to another area, one that was recently been affected by this big war, and they're trying to sort of take over this castle and like restore the area in the aftermath of this conflict. But they're moving into an area where pretty much everybody is a human, and those people have like not a fear of outsiders, but they definitely feel marked as different. The way in which they respond to the player characters is a way of indicating how they're like centuries of being ruled by this evil sorcerer that have just ended as a result of this war have kind of made them a little more insular and a little more suspicious of outsiders. And so you can do the same thing with the half-orcs, right? Like communicate something about the different parts of your game world by the different ways in which people respond to half-orcs. Because ultimately, when we are trying to think about how societies interact, we're not going to be guided effectively by the D&D rulebook. There are things in there that are essentially concessions to the simplification of gameplay. The most obvious one would be like, oh, all humans speak common, which is just not how languages work. It's not how cultures work. It doesn't make any sense. It's there so that you can do this kind of picaresque travel game without thinking about the differences between linguistic communities, right? It's a quality of life feature for a game where those sorts of linguistic questions are not really important, right? In the same way that everybody uses gold pieces as a currency, and so you can never engage in like currency arbitrage. But that is something that this game is not primarily about. But if we start trying to think of this as a world with real societies and real relationships between people, then we're going to have to abandon some of that stuff. So, you know, maybe when you go to one place, people are very welcoming and accepting towards half-orcs, but maybe when you go to another, people have some kind of historical problem with orcs and they project that onto half-orcs. And so on and so forth, right? Like, different places will have different attitudes, not just to half-orcs, but to all their kind of neighboring communities. And if that's an area of the culture that you want to dig into, and it doesn't have to be, then I think it's worth going into a little more detail rather than just saying, oh, humans hate half-orcs. You see that a lot of what I'm talking about here is about deciding on the effect you're trying to create first, right? What is it that you want a player to get out of playing a half-orc? What does the player want to get out of playing a half-orc? Besides a strength bonus, of course. I've mentioned before that one of the few kind of actual play things that I watch and listen to is the podcast Not Another D&D Podcast, or NADPOD for short. Now, I'm very behind, but Allison and I are listening to close to the end of their most recent campaign, I guess. And in that campaign, they're having a confrontation with, the villain's an oversimplification, but they're having a confrontation with the villain, who at one point says, your species is like this, humans are like that, your species do this, that, and the other. And I was thinking to myself, no two of the characters in this party are the same species, and none of them are humans. So the group that they were with is an elf and a ladron, a Goliath, and a bullywug. But the villain spoke truer than she knew, because in actual fact, the group basically behave as if they are all humans, right? As if they're all basically people, and they just kind of come from different places, represented by them being different kind of quite extreme fantasy creatures. Now that sounds like a criticism, but it is not. The idea that people in this context equals a bunch of different looking fantasy creatures, but the differences between them are not super important, is an aesthetic, no worse than any other and better than some. But it is not the aesthetic that historically D&D has had in like the 70s and 80s, and consequently a lot of older people or people who've been playing for a longer time, not saying you're old, don't like it because it's unfamiliar. Now, I'm not really interested in quote-unquote fixing D&D 5th edition because I think that the best use for it and the best use for any edition of D&D is as a big box of Legos. And I think that people would be happier in general if they took the same view, right? Because there are people who care a lot more about eliminating the legacies of these old-fashioned ideas about race and identity from Dungeons & Dragons as the book is currently published, and I agree with them, but sort of like in principle. So what I mean is, good luck to them, but that's not really how I play, and my concern with what is published is to some extent limited to what happens in the games I play in. Some would say that's not a responsible position, and I'm... Now, you knew you weren't getting out of here without a Glorantha interlude. One of the things that sets Glorantha apart from other fantasy settings is that it doesn't really engage with modern concepts of race very much. I'm not saying never, but I attribute this to Greg Stafford's writing being grounded in the ancient world where these concepts were applied quite differently. Not applied, but applied differently. There are no orcs in Glorantha, presumably because Greg Stafford was trying to make Glorantha very different from other published fantasy worlds. So if you look at games like Tunnels and Trolls or whatever, well, it has orcs and so forth, right? Even Harn's got orcs. But in Glorantha, the non-human species, your Aldriami and Mostali and Morakanths and Duruls and whatever, are very different from humans. They're often really weird. And the Duruls, or ducks, as you may be more familiar with them, they're actually not very weird except for the fact that they look like ducks. And that's the bit, right? This is intended to convey, I mean, I don't think this one is intended to convey, it's originally intended to be a goof. These days, it's intended to convey something about the way that Orlanthi culture functions. So someone from Sartar thinks of a Durul's as a human much more than they think about a Telmori as a human, even though the Telmori looks more like the Sartari. But there are others who would see the Durul's as being more akin to other beast people. So we have a world where identities are complex and overlapping, where people don't fit neatly into single categories, whole societies don't fit neatly into single categories, and in fact, everybody performs and participates in different identities in different contexts, a bit like in the real world. I could go on about this forever, you know how I feel about Glorantha, but one of the things I don't quite get about, like, dungeoneering in Glorantha or whatever, like, doing more or less straight fantasy adventure in Glorantha is, like, I don't know why you would learn all this stuff about Glorantha, but then not really engage with any of these themes. And conversely, maybe that level of thinking about society is too complex if what you're playing is a game that is primarily about going down the dungeon and looking for the treasure. Do I need to think about half-orcs in my world, or do I need to think about my half-orc characters and how people interact with them? We may not engage in that level of world building. Early D&D does not particularly seem to have, right? That even when people were thinking about the setting, they were thinking about lines on maps, and they were thinking about the numbers of knights that each duchy could have, and sort of what its exports were. But I don't know to what extent they were thinking about its mores beyond a kind of, like, oh, well, it's old-timey, you know. We haven't really scratched the surface of, like, the issues surrounding the portrayal of orcs and half-orcs, and it's not really my intention to do more than that. I'm more concerned with ways to implement this in a game in a way that's fun, where being a half-orc adds something to your play that isn't just a couple of extra points of strength. And I think that you do have to think a little bit about what it means to be a half-orc, and therefore in turn, what it means to be an orc, in order to do that. But you need to tailor that solution to what it is that you think the players in your game are looking for from the experience of playing a half-orc, right? The idea of an outsider torn between two cultures, gifted by their heritage with exceptional strength, but misunderstood by those around them, is a very appealing character to a lot of people. If that's what your players are looking for, then that's what your half-orcs ought to be like. But there are other people who want to play someone who is tormented by the fact that they have a heritage that they themselves see as evil. I've only played a half-orc once, and my half-orc was a lawful good cleric of St. Cuthbert. His whole deal was that basically because he felt that he had an evil heritage, and he particularly despised, well, not so much he despised orcs, but he despised Gruumsh and people who worshipped Gruumsh, which, I mean, basically means orcs, but I guess there's probably some humans who do. But because he felt that he had this aspect of his heritage that was evil, he held himself to this particular particularly rigorous sort of standard of uprightness and morality, and it may be that he was wrong, but that's the way that he felt. And I think that both of those can be rewarding character concepts. They can be fun to play, and they are to some extent rooted in ideas about, you know, heritage and identity that are not true in the real world, but that are common in fantasy. And I don't think that that's necessarily prohibitive as long as they are handled intelligently. And while I don't think that a book published by a major gaming publisher is likely to handle them intelligently, I do think that a gaming table of friends who are able to talk about these ideas are able to do that. Does that make sense? So anyway, that was a bit of a ramble, Daniel, but I hope that it did provide some fun ideas. And as always, anyone else, if you'd like to be like Daniel and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we will be continuing our journey through Monsters Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And I haven't checked what's up, but we've got to be getting pretty close to orcs, actually. So it might be a little bit of a sequel to this one. We shall see. Next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.